this conference, and I feel a little out of place here because I'm probably one of the least qualified here as a student of Spencer, if one counts the number of his articles that I have read seriously. And well, it's the first time I met Spencer was in a conference in Rimini in 1983. At that time, I was basically a graduate student. I was very frightened of algebraic geometry, and I had a question, and Sule told me, oh, you should ask Spencer. So I asked him, and I think I told you some nonsense about Brau group for half an hour in front of a blackboard. Then in 1984, I spent 3 days in Chicago, and we talked a little, and I remember once Spencer tells me, so by the Yoneda lemma, and then I asked him, can you tell me what is the Yoneda lemma? So, and that was also the time when Spencer was looking for higher child groups. And so you also told me about that a little, and I was trying to understand and to follow. And and the next year you were in Paris and you had found it and you talked about them. But I remember also you told me at that time that you had an idea to mix the Langlands conjectures and the Kato and Saito higher class field theory, which was due at the time. So there were some rings without unit I've completely forgotten, and I don't know if you ever developed that. No. Right. So that's my recollection. So anyway, took me some time to meet Spencer's mathematics, but since he's everywhere dense in the subject, it's impossible to avoid, even if you wanted to avoid it. So, and he will show up in this talk. But in fact, he will show up jointly with Kazuya Kato. So let me start. The title is Questions on Weights. And Albanese varieties. And I'll start with an insight. So what's the Bloch-Kato conjecture? Well, it tells you that locally, etal cohomology is given by units. What's the Tate conjecture? Well, it tells you that globally, some of eladic cohomology is given by algebraic cycles. I don't know if it's an insight, but let's try and see how far it can lead us. Can lead us. So now I'll try and make a fool of myself. So I'll take an algebraically closed field, which will be the algebraic closure of a finite field. And I'll take a surface over K. So smooth, projective surface. And I also choose a prime number, which is different from the characteristic of K. And, well, the first thing one can do is I can find an open subset in X, open, such that PQ is divisible. And then for such a U, there's an exact sequence like this. So 0, that's the Néron-Sévry group of X, tensor ZL, goes to H2 of X, ZL of 1, and shows to H2 of U, ZL of 1. Because the Néron-Sévry group of X is finitely generated, so if I remove enough divisors from X, I will make PQ divisible. And for this U, of course, this composition is going to be zero. And on the other hand, the kernel of this is generated by classes of divisors. So that's an exact sequence. And so this tells us that the Tate conjecture. Ah, okay, I'll take some notation. I'll say that I have a finite subfield over which X is defined, and so the X over K0 I'll denote by X0, and let's say that G is the Galois group of K over K0. So the Tate conjecture for X is a consequence of saying that fixed points of this group under Galois are finite. And in fact, it's even it's equivalent, because when you look at the kernel of this, the next term in the exact sequence for cohomology with supports, then you get weight strictly bigger than zero, because it's by some purity. Right. So that's a reformulation of the Tate conjecture to ask that this is finite. And the nice thing is that we can take U as small as we want. So now here's the idea I would like to explore. So let me give a definition. H2 bar of U ZL of 1 is co-kernel of, so I'll take H2 of Albanese varieties, I need more room, here it's a sum over F, so F runs through proper surjective maps from smooth projective surfaces weeks. AY is the Albanese variety of, this is a 2 of Y. So I can choose some universal map from Y to AY, and I get a pullback map. And I take this composition. I look at what's generated by all of these, and I divide H2 of U, ZL of 1 by all these images. So for instance, if X is a Kummer surface, then I have AX equals 0, but of course X comes from some abelian surface, so there's a rational map, dominant rational map from some abelian surface to X. So maybe that's some reason to do that, right? And then this conjecture would follow from H2 bar of U ZL of 1 in weight strictly bigger than 0, right? Because we have Tate's theorem, which tells us that this part has no Galois invariance, because this comes from abelian varieties. Right. And here, actually, I don't know if it's an equivalence. Tate's conjecture is true for abelian varieties, right? So the part which comes from abelian varieties has no Galois invariance. Has no fixed points under Frobenius. What? Yes, but I have I have got rid of algebraic cycles. Yeah. Right. So let's try the and see how far we can go. Sorry? Well, some piece of G is going to act on Y, because Y will be defined maybe not over the same finite field, but some finite extension.
So you're looking for something of things that are invariant under an open.
That's right. Yes. Yes. I should take the union of these guys under all open subsets, subgroups of G. Okay. So now, here's a second lemma. Now I can take my U as small as I want. Therefore, I can assume. That I have an elementary fibration à la Artine. So like this, I have U, which projects over V, which is a curve, so that's a aspect K. And there's a smooth compactification, so that this is a smooth projective relative curve, and the divisor at infinity is etal over V. That's Artin's. I'm not going to write a complement, because I want to complete this diagram like this. I can take the smooth completion of V, so smooth completion. And then how about X? Well, X contains U, but maybe not U bar. But This is the surface, so I can blow up. I can resolve similarities, and I can always arrange by changing X to have such a diagram. So up to blowing up. So that's a pretty comfortable situation. Right. So now here is the lemma. So a la block and Kato. So this is a thickening of an old theorem proved independently by Spencer and by Kazuya Kato. So this says that for all n greater than or equal to 1, there exists some finite etal cover such that the composition, so I take I'll pull back this diagram and at least this part of the diagram, and I'll put n indices, right? So if I take h1 of vn z mod l to the n tensor h1 of un z mod l to the n, then I can go to like cap product to h2 of un z mod l to the n, and then by fn lower star to h2 of u z mod l to the n, well, that this composition is surjective. Absolutely, yes. So for each n, I can find a vn. And the proof is exactly the same as their proof. So one says that let's look for this this vn. So suppose I have some vn and un like that, and this is, let's say, pi n. Then vn is an affine curve, and un is a fine over vn, right? So if I look at h2 of un z mod l to the n, this is h1 of vn r1 pi lower star z mod l to the n, because this is commutative dimension 1 and this is commutative dimension 1, right? Now I can that's pi n lower star, but this sheaf is the pullback by fn of the corresponding sheaf over v, right? So r1 pi lower star z mod l to the n is locally constant constructible, so I can find the vn which trivializes it. So take vn trivializing it, then I can take it out of the coefficients, and this is h1 of vn z mod l to the n tensor, let's say, h0 of vn r1 pi lower star z mod l to the n. And then this receives h1 of vn z mod l to the n tensor h1 of un z mod l to the n. But this is surjective because vn has commutative dimension 1. So in the Lorentz spectral sequence here, the next term is h2 of vn, so it's 0. Right. And finally, if I take the trace fn lower star to h2 of u 10 mod L to the N. Well, this is surjective because U has a cohomological dimension 2. So on the last H2, it's surjective. So that's how you prove the lemma. Right. Okay. So now I want to go back. I should have defined. So definition H2 bar of U Z mod L to the N equals same as before with coefficients Z mod L to the N. Right? And then the next lemma is for the next lemma I need to straighten things out. So I have Vn, and above Vn I have the pullback of my previous situation like this. And then I can do the same. That means I can take the smooth completion of Vn, and then I can so if I take the fiber product of X and Cn over C, because Cn now is going to map to C, then this might be singular, but I can resolve singularities, and I can arrange to have a situation like this, so with a smooth projective, which maps to the previous diagram. Right? So now I can state the next lemma. So with this notation, the composition, so H1 of Cn Z mod L to the N, tensor H1 of Xn Z mod L to the N, 2H1 of Vn Z mod L to the N, tensor H1 of Un Z mod L to the N, and then I go all the way down to H2 of U Z mod L to the N, and then to the H2 bar. Is zero. And the proof is that, so first, anyway, I pull back from, I had to pull back from Vn to Un to get the previous composition. This passes through H1 of Un, tensor H1 of Un. So here, I can pull back to H1 of Xn, tensor H1 of Xn. But let me take the Albanese variety of Xn. And I take some universal map. Well, this is an isomorphism, because it's an H1 of a smooth projective variety, the same as for its Albanese. And therefore, I can pass through H2 of An, and then I go back to H2 of Xn, and then so I have passed through H2 of some abelian variety, and I have one. So that's the trick. So, okay. Let's look at where we are now. I have this group H2 bar of U Z mod L to the N, and I have covered it by something like this, H1 of Vn Z mod L to the N, tensor H1 of Un Z mod L to the N, modulo the image of H1 of Cn Z mod L to the N, tensor H1 of Xn Z mod L to the N. That's what I have done so far. So if I replace coefficient Z mod L to the N by ZL, then let's look at the weights. So this is weight one, this is weight one, and then if you look at the rest and you look at the localization exact sequences, then you find that weights of the quotient are strictly bigger than 2, right? Because it's weight 1 plus 2, 2 plus 1, and 2 plus 2. That's what occurs. So we are in good shape. That's what I was looking for, right? But now the problem is that we have finite coefficients, and then well, when you try to prove the Tate conjecture by naive methods, usually what you bump into is that you have something which climbs and you try to catch it and climbs to infinity, and then you get in trouble, and so now the trouble begins. So another definition. So X sub n is the image of H. I shouldn't erase these two diagrams, right? H1 of Vn tensor H1 of Un bar H2 bar of U Z mod L to the N. Right? So that's the bad set. And so using the projection formula, you see easily that X n plus 1 maps to x n. So when you project from L to the n plus 1 to L to the n. So they form a projective system. So the easy part is to look at the quotient. So the quotient I can control like this. I get a surjection. From H1 of Vn tensor H1 of Un mod H1 of Vn tensor H1 of Un bar onto well, H2 bar of U Z mod L to the N modulo X sub n. Okay, and now what's the difference between these two? So actually, when you look at the proof of this lemma here, what shows up is not really H1 of Un, but it's H0 of Vn in R1 pi lower star. Right? So when you compute this, you find that this is this surjection factors through H1 Vn tensor the co-kernel of H0 of Vn R1 pi n lower star bar. Ah, I should use some notation. So this is pi n, this is pi n bar, and this is going to be capital pi n. So this factors through this co-kernel. And this is really the situation over V which is pulled back to Vn. So that's the exceptional divisor over V, which is etale over V. So this is a very good situation. This is this co-kernel is yes.
Did you say that H1, so is the H1 of X n, I'm having a little trouble with it, but it is the same as H1 of A n, because you said H1 of a variety is H1 of a double n?
Yes, with the Z mod L to the n coefficient.
Yeah, I don't believe it. I mean, like, oh. So I think that's almost, but like if you take for example n Rika surface, like the H1 of n Rika surface is with say Z mod 2 coefficients, which is Z mod 2, but the Alameda of n Rika surface is 0.
Oh, so what happens?
What I believe is that the kernel is sort of, is bounded. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So I don't think it's going to affect your result.
Right. So thanks for pointing this out. Yeah. So if I took QL coefficients, this would be true, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So in fact, it's really that the Albanese, the L to the n portion of the Albanese is really H2 b minus 1 of X.
Ah, right. Yeah. So if I take ZL, I get some isogeny between the, two H1s. Yes, so it's not completely clear. It's not completely clear whether it affects my argument or not. So thanks for pointing this out. I don't know, because n tends to infinity with L to the n. So an varies with
But I think the de facto is a completely finite bounded thing that you can completely control.
No, even independently of XM.
There's a variety set dependent on X. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, so I take that back.
I'm not sure. But, there are lots of traps in this argument. So I'm yes. Well, I said I was trying to make a fool of myself anyway. So let me continue in this way. Where am I? Yes. So this, I was studying this co-kernel, and I was saying that co-kernel of R1 pi n lower star to, that means Z mod L to the n. Actually, I would even put okay, I'll do this. Let me look at this one. Ah, this is a bar, and this is no bar. I could put a tilde instead, but this is less suggestive. Sorry? So far, there is no big pi. Not yet. It's going to come, unfortunately. So this co-kernel is really something like G tensor ZL of minus 1, where G is a locally constant Z constructible sheaf over V, right? Because it's really controlled by the divisors. It's controlled by U bar minus U by U bar minus U over V. So I can find V prime over V finite etal such that G restricted to V prime is constant. And when I do this process of finding Vn, I can also I can choose Vn such that it factors to discovery. Right? So then what's happening to me? Well, by the projection formula, I just take Vn large enough. This locally constant sheaf G. So then this means that in this tensor product I have H1 of Vn, and then I have basically G of G tensor Z mod. So that's basically G tensor Z mod L to the n of minus 1. G is integral. It's the pullback of G from V prime to Vn, but G is constant over V prime. Right? So using the projection formula, I can get down from Vn to V prime. So I get a surjection now from H1 of V prime tensor G tensor Z mod L to the n of minus 1 onto H2 bar of U Z mod L to the n modulo the exceptional part. Right? So now I'm happy because my V prime is fixed. It doesn't depend on n. And I can pass to the limit. So I get surjection of H1 of V prime ZL, let's say of minus 1, tensor G onto H2 bar of U VL modulo X, where X is the limit of the XN. And now I win because this is of weight one plus two, three. This is weight zero. So this is of weight at least three. Well, actually, V prime is open, so this is this has weight three and four. Weight at least three. Right. So that part I have achieved. I have succeeded to control. And now comes the bad part, which is the exceptional thing, and we get into a mess. I have 20 minutes, I'll try to describe the mess. Thank you. Okay, so where are we? What controls Xn? Well, by definition, so this is the nasty part. So I write Xn controlled by H1 of Vn tensor H1 of Un bar modulo H1 of Cn tensor H1 Vxn. Right? And now I have to understand the structure of this. So I have exact sequences like this. So one is 0 goes for H1 of Cn to H1 of Vn, and then there's a direct sum of Z mod L to the n over points in the complement, but I should put of minus 1, and then there's H2 of Cn, which is ZL, Z mod L to the n of minus 1. So this is a divisor map, I mean a degree map. So let's say that this goes, I was calling it Ln tensor Z mod L to the n of minus 1. So the co-kernel of this map is sum Ln tensor Z mod L to the n minus 1. And this Ln is given by the... What?
Ln is always the problem.
Oh! But there's going to be an MN. So who is MN? Okay. It's coming soon. Ah, I could write it here. So the other one is for between Xn and Un bar, but here we can do a little better because it's really a question of H0 of R1. So I want to look at H0 of Cn R1. Here is my capital pi, n lower star, going to H0 of Un bar R1 pi n bar lower star, and then this is finite coefficients. Yes, I won't write then but L to the n all the time. And then here, when you look at it, you find that the co-kernel is of the form Mn tensor Z mod L to the n of minus 1. So I should maybe write formula for Ln. It's the kernel of direct sum of Z to Z for points in Cn minus Vn. Right? And Mn is a bit more murky. So Mn, where is it? Is some sub sheaf of co-kernel of Ln mapping to the same thing for Xn and Un bar. So it's direct sum of Z for X in the points in Xn of codimension 1 minus points of Un bar of codimension 1. So if you think of the situation over we are, this is fibered over this, right? So Vn is etal over V. The left part of the diagram is phi. It's etal, finite. Then Cn over C is finite. It might have singularities, but it's not too bad. This Ln is not too bad. The bad part starts with Xn, because then you have to blow up. So you have some exceptional some bad divisors. You could have reducible fibers with multiplicities, and this looks uncontrollable. So this is not too bad. And more or less, and this looks uncontrollable. Okay. So anyway, on my quotient which dominate Xn, I get a two-step filtration thanks to these exact sequences. So I get a two-step filtration. No, there are two. It's the weight filtration mod L to the N. So the co-kernel is LN tensor MN tensor Z mod L to the N of minus 2, and the kernel is a quotient of, well, H1 of Vn of minus 1 tensor Ln class Mn tensor H0 of Vn, and that was R1 pi n bar lower star of minus 1. Right? And then, so the trouble has already begun. So let's try and understand what's going on. Now we have to remember that secretly we have a finite field lying below, and we are trying to look at the Galois action over this geometric situation. So I don't want to touch this. Second call, yes, so geometrically I can take the function field of V or C, function field of Vn or Cn, and look at the generic fiber of my diagram. So I have something like that, Kn over K. So this is K of C, this is K of Cn, and here I have, I have a curve, gamma, which is the generic fiber of X, and here I have gamma N, which is the generic fiber of Xn, but it's really the pullback of gamma over Kn, and Kn is essentially obtained by adjoining to K the torsion point of the Jacobian of gamma. Right? So that's more or less what I have done up to some finite things. And below, we have the situation over this field K upper 0. So we have, I write K0 containing small k upper 0, and then why is it written in the opposite? Well, anyway, I have my curve that I'm going to call gamma 0, defined over k0, and here I have some kn0, here I have gamma n0, and here I have some field extension of the constant, right? So this is a larger finite field, right? And here there's a degree dn, and here there's a larger degree dn. And as Kato pointed out, actually, kn0 contains mu l to the n, because of the Weyl pairing. So it's probably not very different from adjoining the l to the nth root of unity to k0. Now let's try and look at these invariants. So I'll take this blackboard down again. So, yes, okay. So, ln corresponds to Cn minus Vn. So okay, we could look at the Galois situation. I have G. We could assume that these extensions are Galois without loss of generality. So then I could look at Gn0, which is Galois group of kn0 over k0, which maps to the Galois group of kn over k. Oops, this notation is not consistent. Kn0 over k0. And then there is the geometric Galois group, which is gal of kn over k. Right? And we are trying to understand what's going on with these the Galois action on these invariants, because this is living over kn, and to go back to the cohomology of x or u, I have to take traces. So to understand things, you should really first take the Gn co-invariance of these guys, and then try to measure the action of this on it, and hope that it's not too bad. And well, Ln Ln is approximately an induced module. For Gn, I mean, there will be ramification, but one can hope that when n tends to infinity, this will stabilize somehow. So this one is not too bad, but already if you look at this, where is I'm lost. Ah, yes, Michael Connelly is here. Already, if you look at the co-kernel, you are going to take the co-invariance of this under Gn. And so now you know the Frobenius action, which is by q to the square on this part. But you have to hope that the Frobenius action on the co-invariance here is not too bad. And here, already here, I don't know, it's not clear how to control this. So it's... I better stop, and I hope you enjoyed yourself.
Any questions?
This is probably a stupid question, but are there any implications between the Tate conjecture and the Block-Cutter-Wilmer conjecture? And is it conceivable that the line could be some diversion?
See, at first, about 2 years ago, I had a great proof of the Tate conjecture in codimension one using the Merkowiev-Suslin theorem. And this proof was wrong, of course. And this is a kind of toning down, coming back to reality of this attempt. And so the Merkowiev-Suslin theorem has disappeared because I'm just using a surface and there. So it's, the answer is not very clear. And there's one thing one could add, which is this is really, I'm really working over an algebraically closed field. So when we say Block-Cutter conjecture, it's not really necessary to say that. We could say Suslin's theorem, because he proved it for schemes over an algebraically closed field. So here we are, and the proof is quite... easy to understand, so we are in very comfortable. But in fact, this conjecture doesn't really appear, so I'm not sure about my insight. It may be some philosophical insight.
Yes.